Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Have you ever wondered about life's incredible ability to adapt and thrive across, well, vast stretches of time? I mean, imagine single-celled organisms, like yeasts, right? Surviving and evolving for over 400 million years through huge shifts in their environments. What's their secret? Well, at the heart of it all are enzymes, these tiny sort of unsung molecular machines that run pretty much every biological process. Think digestion, copying DNA.
Everything.
Basically.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. They aren't static. Yeah, they evolve. Yeah. So the mystery we're digging into today is what forces guide the evolution of these tiny machines? Is it just random chance, or is there something, you know, deeper going on?
It's a fantastic question. And recent research really points to a perhaps surprising answer. It's all about how organisms process energy and nutrients, their metabolism. And for the first time, really, thanks to breakthroughs in AI like AlphaFold 2, we can actually map this evolution in, well, incredible detail.
Right. So that's what we're exploring in this deep dive. It's a scientific journey spanning 400 million years, revealing how the chemistry of life itself shapes its molecular machinery, enzyme by enzyme.
It's a really fundamental look at adaptation.
So today we want to celebrate the groundbreaking work of Oliver Lemke, Benjamin Murray Heinicke, Marcus Rauscher, and their many collaborators, folks from institutions like Charité in Berlin, the University of Oxford, Chalmers University. A big team effort.
Absolutely. Their approach, integrating structural biology with evolutionary genomics, it's really pushed our understanding forward. Seeing how metabolism shapes enzyme structure over these huge time scales, it's a great example of what happens when different fields come together.
Okay, so let's unpack this a bit. Enzymes. They're fundamental to pretty much everything biological.
Everything. Digestion, DNA replication, energy, you name it.
And because they're so critical, they're targets for, well, all sorts of things. Drug development, finding disease markers, even bioengineering, right?
Definitely. But despite how important they are, our grasp on the sort of global biochemical constraints, the big rule shaping how they function and evolve, has been surprisingly incomplete. It's a big gap. We've known for a while about certain factors, of course, like the properties of the amino acids they're built from matter, and even the cost of making them plays a role. You know, sometimes cells prefer less energy efficient pathways like fermentation, simply because making the enzymes for it is cheaper resource-wise. And you see that high abundance enzymes, the ones cells make a lot of, tend to use less energetically costly amino acids.
That makes sense, sort of like cellular economics.
Yeah.
And building on that, there were these two main ideas about how whole metabolic networks evolved, right?
Exactly. Did the network structure come about because of how enzymes evolved? Or did simpler non-enzymatic chemical reactions happen first, like a basic scaffold, and then enzymes evolved later to make those reactions better, more efficient?
And this new research leans towards the second idea, the scaffolding first.
It provides some pretty compelling evidence for that, yeah. And this is where the new tech like AI really comes in. The central idea, the hypothesis of this paper, was basically that being able to predict protein structures en masse with AlphaFold 2, well, that would let scientists finally link up high-res structural data with the evolutionary genomics.
So connecting the shape to the history, basically.
Precisely. The hope was this integration could unlock a much deeper understanding of how metabolism and protein evolution are, you know, fundamentally linked. And the way they did it was really innovative. They leveraged the huge evolutionary history of the Saccharomycetina yeasts. It's an amazing group, 400 million years of evolution right there. Includes species we know well, like Saccharomyces, Cerevisiae, Baker's yeast, and Candida albicans.
And the scale. The data set sounds enormous.
Oh, it is. They analyzed, get this, 11,269 enzyme structures. Yeah. And over 9,900 of those were newly predicted using AlphaFold 2. That just shows you the power. Plus over 1,300 existing structures. And this covered enzymes from 361 metabolic reactions across 224 pathways. It's like building an evolutionary atlas for these molecular machines.
Okay, so how did they actually compare them across all those species and structures?
So they picked 26 diverse yeast species plus an outgroup species for comparison. They used Baker's yeast S. cerevisiae as the reference point, and they calculated something called a conservation ratio, or CR.
CR, okay.
Right. It basically measures the percentage of amino acids that are identical in the same structural spot between enzymes in different species. So a low CR means lots of change, high divergence. High CR means it stayed very similar, highly conserved.
Got it. Structure, conservation. What else did they look at?
They pulled in loads of other data. Phenotypic data, like how well the yeasts grew on different sugars, 21 different ones. Actual protein abundance measurements from proteomics. And predictions of metabolic flux from genome scale models. They even calculated the cost of making amino acids and looked at different parts of the enzyme structure surface versus core, binding sites, helices versus sheets. And crucially, they did evolutionary selection analysis and looked for these clusters of highly conserved amino acids. They even trained a machine learning model on these clusters to find potential new binding sites.
Okay, that's a massive multi-layered analysis. So pulling it all together, what's the headline? What did they find?
The headline is really clear. Metabolism profoundly shapes enzyme structural evolution. And it does it at multiple levels, from the whole species down to specific pathways, and even right down to the molecular details inside the enzyme.
So metabolic environment is like a sculptor for these proteins.
That's a great way to put it, yeah. For instance, at the species level, enzymes from yeasts that specialize in fermentation showed higher structural conservation compared to their relatives in S. cerevisiae. And the biggest structural differences they saw, those were in enzymes involved in central carbon metabolism and the electron transport chain core energy processes.
Can you give an example of that specialization?
Sure. So they looked at species that could use xylose, which is another type of sugar. In those species, enzymes related to actually using xylose showed shifts in conservation. But interestingly, so did parts of the electron transport chain. And even different versions of the same enzyme, like acetyl-CoA synthase, there's an aerobic and an anaerobic version, behave differently depending on whether the yeast could use xylose or not. It really highlights how the specific metabolic niche drives these evolutionary patterns.
Okay, so specialization matters. What about general trends across different metabolic pathways?
Yeah, they saw clear trends there too. Some were pretty intuitive. Enzymes in really fundamental processes, making purines for DNA, certain amino acids, central metabolism like glycolysis, the TCA cycle.
The real core stuff.
Exactly. Those were highly conserved. Makes sense, right? They're essential. But then enzymes involved in things like lipid metabolism, breaking down fatty acids, and also protein glycosylation, they were among the most divergent, the most changed.
Why lipids?
The researchers suggest that maybe lipidomes, the collection of lipids in a cell, have more flexibility to adapt compared to other core systems. And looking at enzyme classes, oxidoreductases, which handle energy transfer, very conserved, especially because they're key players in central metabolism. But here's a bit of a puzzle they found. Hydrolases, the ones that use water to break bonds, they were generally more diverse.
More diverse. That seems counterintuitive somehow.
It was puzzling. We can circle back to why that might be. And then, thinking about molecular interactions, enzymes that bind metal ions, more conserved. Enzymes that are inhibited by lots of different molecules inside the cell, also more conserved. It shows how these specific chemical interactions act as strong constraints.
Right. Those interactions are like fixed points in the evolution. Okay. Let's talk about the economics again. Abundance, cost. How did that connect to conservation?
Right. So they found a strong link. Low abundance enzymes were more diverse. High abundance ones were more conserved. Makes sense. Maybe you need the common ones to be reliable. But here's the twist. It wasn't just the amount of metabolic stuff flowing through a pathway, the flux, that correlated most strongly with conservation. It was the variability of that flux.
The variability.
How so? Enzymes in pathways where the flux changes a lot, goes up and down depending on conditions, those enzymes were actually more diverse. It seems like needing to cope with those fluctuations requires more evolutionary flexibility, maybe.
Interesting. So stability breeds conservation, but variability allows for more divergence. And the cost.
And the cost ties in those lower abundance, more diverse enzymes. They tended to be made of costlier amino acids. And that cost optimization, saving energy on building blocks, happened mostly on the enzyme surfaces, not in the critical binding sites or the core. The conserved high abundance enzymes tended to use cheaper amino acids like glycine, glutamate, alanine, especially on their surfaces.
So protect the core function at all costs, then economize on the outside.
That's basically the picture, yeah. Function first, then optimize cost where you can without breaking it.
Okay, so we've got species level, pathway level, economics. Let's go really micro now. What about the different parts of a single enzyme, the structure itself?
Yeah, digging into the structure confirmed this hierarchy. The enzyme's core was more conserved than its surface. That fits the cost idea too. But even more conserved than the core were the binding sites. Where the substrates or other molecules actually interact, they had the highest conservation ratio overall.
Makes sense. Change the binding site, you lose the function.
Exactly. Mess that up, and the enzyme is useless. And here's a subtle detail that was quite surprising. Helical structures, alpha helices, they were more variable than beta sheets.
More variable than sheets, okay.
Yeah, and maybe even more surprising, they were even more variable than the random coil regions.
Random coils. Shouldn't they be the most flexible and variable?
You'd think so. But the hypothesis is that specific turns within those seemingly random coil regions are actually highly conserved. They provide important structure. So the random bits aren't entirely random, evolutionarily speaking.
Wow. Okay. That really shows the detail here. Mm. And you mentioned clusters of conserved residues earlier.
Yes. These highly conserved amino acids weren't just scattered randomly. They often formed distinct clusters on the enzyme structure. They used pyruvate kinase as an example, a key enzyme. The conserved clusters mapped perfectly onto the known sites for substrate binding, for allosteric activation, where regulator molecules bind, and even where it interacts with other proteins.
So these clusters are like functional hotspots.
Pretty much. And they found these clusters contain about twice as many known binding sites compared to other regions. They even built a machine learning model that could predict known binding sites just by looking for these conserved clusters.
Which means you could potentially use this to find new binding sites, ones we don't know about yet.
Exactly. It suggests these clusters are a powerful tool for discovery, for annotating enzyme function. So tying it all together, these findings really bolster that idea of the ancient metabolic network acting as a scaffold. The chemistry was there first, perhaps, and enzymes evolved upon it, optimizing catalysis. And the parts essential for that core job, the catalysis, they changed the least over hundreds of millions of years.
Right. It paints a picture of a clear hierarchy of evolution. It's not random. Mm-hmm. Core functions, catalytic sites, absolutely protected, highly conserved. But the surfaces, other bits, they adapt more freely to the cell's environment, metabolic demands, and driven by that cost factor we talked about. Which makes me wonder, does this mean if you want to engineer an enzyme, you should focus mostly on tweaking the surface?
Well, that's certainly where a lot of the natural variation happens, so it suggests it's more malleable, yes.
Okay.
It offers potential handles for engineering. And it also helps explain that hydrolase paradox we mentioned.
Yes. The hydrolase is being more diverse. Why?
The thinking is, because hydrolases often work without needing complex cofactors, their basic reaction mechanism might just be less constrained. There are maybe more ways to achieve hydrolysis, allowing for more evolutionary divergence, whereas something like an oxidoreductase, deeply tied into central metabolism and often needing cofactors, is much more locked down.
This level of detail is amazing, and it has real practical implications, doesn't it? For you listening, this isn't just abstract theory. You mentioned enzyme annotation. Using these conserved clusters to find new binding sites that could speed up figuring out what thousands of enzymes actually do.
Absolutely. There are many enzymes where we know the sequence, maybe the structure, but the precise function or regulation is still unclear. This offers a new angle.
And beyond just understanding, what about metabolic network engineering?
That's a huge area. If you want to design an enzyme for biotech, say, making biofuels or a specific chemical, knowing which parts are flexible and which are critical is invaluable. Or from medicine, understanding how enzymes evolve in pathogens, or how human enzyme variants affect health. This framework gives us rules for thinking about enzyme structure and function that we didn't have before. It could help predict drug resistance or design better therapies. So really, the take-home message is that enzyme evolution isn't random at all. It's tightly governed by the enzyme's job, its catalytic function, and significantly shaped by its metabolic context, its environment. We see this clear hierarchy. Core functions, binding sites, super conserved. Other parts adapt, optimizing for cost, for flux variability. It's a complex interplay.
It provides such clarity on the fundamental rules of how molecules adapt. So the big question remains, what does this detailed evolutionary map mean for our future ability to engineer biology or to tackle big challenges like drug resistance? Where do we go from here? This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this analysis, the best way to support Base by Base is to subscribe or follow in your favorite podcast app and leave us a 5-star rating. It only takes a few seconds, but makes a huge difference in helping others discover the show. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, base by base.